You're listening to the Isaka Podcast. I'm your host, Abby Norton, and today I'm speaking with Isaka security experts Justin Brewer and Frank Downs about malware. What it is, what forms it might present itself in, and how COVID-19 has changed it. So, Justin, can you start us off with an introduction to malware?
So, malware is one of these things that, you know, I almost feel like it should be gone.
Yeah.
We shouldn't have malware anymore. But in current news cycles, we've been seeing some pop-ups of some very prolific malware, such as Emotet, which I'm sure that a lot of you have heard about or read about. And its successes are largely based upon user interaction, right? So we have attack vectors via email. I think that's its biggest one, but it also is able to spread via Wi-Fi. And it's polymorphic too, which means that it's really, really hard to capture with signature analysis. But that's, you know, we're just really talking about one particular piece of malware. There's plenty of other malware out there that still works, right? And we have, regardless of how good your cybersecurity group is, malware analysis is one of those things where it's kind of, I don't want to say it's everybody's job on your cybersecurity team, but it is one of those things that you have the one guy or gal on your team who's amazing at it, right? And they'll give me that. Yeah. And they'll load it up into the decompiler or debugger and they'll take a look at it and they'll be like, what's this thing doing? You know, they'll try to reverse engineer it and even, you know, possibly get a signature out of it to try to mitigate its effects on your network. And it's kind of like packet analysis. It's you have that one person, Frank, who loves to do packet analysis on your team, right? And malware is one of those things. But I feel like, again, it's just so funny because we have all these great intellectual people out there who every day are going out and finding malware, writing the signatures for them, you know, figuring out ways to block the malware. But Emotet is kind of an interesting case study because it came out in 2014 and then it went away, and then it came back again, and then went away, and then it came back again. And every time it comes back stronger. So it's kind of this interesting, we talk about malware, but we can really call it a virus, or we can call it by any antiquated term that we have in computer science. But this is actually acting somewhat similar to a virus. And I think that we're all very familiar with viruses these days. As we are in the middle of a pandemic ourselves as humans, we kind of see this weird pandemic happening in the cyber world as well, with this particular virus that's going away, coming back, going away, and coming back.
I'd like a little more static analysis of this than dynamic analysis of this virus, though, right? And malware, and especially analysis of it, is something I talk about with my students often in their course. It's weird. I mean, Dustin, when you say that we shouldn't have malware anymore, I mean, arguably, so that's a sticky subject, right? Especially when you consider that for anyone who's been to our conferences and so forth, you're always going to hear secure DevOps. And it's always one of the most jam-packed sessions in our actual conferences, because even if these people have never typed a single string of code in their life, you have people who will fill up an entire auditorium just to hear about how they should be coding. Because let's be honest, if you could be prescient, right, and not just do secure DevOps from the ground up, but also kind of have an idea of where things are going, so you're going to protect the code that way and this way too, then yes, we ideally wouldn't have malware anymore. But that's not the world we live in at all, because for a couple of reasons. One, nobody codes that well. And someone somewhere is probably like in their car slamming their driving wheel right now being like, you don't know how I code. You don't know. I'm great. But also, you have, and I hate doing this because I feel like it's a trope that's overused, but it's still there. And we still see it in our state of cyber surveys too. You will still have people who are going to plug a USB drive into something they shouldn't, right? You'll still have people who will click a link that they shouldn't. And you'll still have people. But there's going to continue to be, I personally think, as long as there's going to be an avenue for exploitation, I think you're still going to always have someone who's going to figure out how to break stuff. Right. I'm always reminded of the process where every time a new Windows update comes out, right, there's the security researchers that'll take a complete image of their current build. Then they'll update on another system and that's the exact same system, do an image of that, and then do the comparative analysis, right, with the bits to see what's changed, what security patches were applied. Because if you can find the discrepancies and where the patches were applied, you may be able to find commonalities and other ways to apply those same types of exploitations in another part of the system. I think that's the bee's knees. I also think that that is going to be something that's going to be applicable for as long as we have updates. What do you think, Dustin?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you definitely struck two chords with what you were saying. One is secure DevOps, right? So it turns out Emotet uses one of our good old friends here from the Eternal Blue exploit. So that's kind of where DevOps comes in, you know, especially talking about malware, because when it comes to specific malware that can self-spread like a worm, right, it usually requires some kind of exploit in order to do that. We saw that with WannaCry, right? We saw that with WannaCry back in, what was that, Frank, 2018, and how quickly it spread and how it was able to take over so many unpatched systems. The other point that you hit on, aside from secure DevOps, was basically end-user training. Right? Don't click on the link, because the main way that this thing gets initially on a system is by somebody clicking on a link that they're not supposed to click on. Now, we've been to conferences before where, you know, I wish I could remember who said this, but there was a security researcher who was on a panel with actually you, Frank, and he said, you know, links are meant to be clicked on. That's like their main function. So when somebody sends you a human a link, and they click on that link, that's what they were supposed, that's literally what that thing was designed for. Now, of course, this is somebody, if it's a phishing attack or some other type of malware attack, it's an exploitation of that human behavior or of that belief that, you know, or that functionality of the link, right? It's the exploitation of that. But it's one of those things where it's okay to click on links, but just make sure that you're mindfully doing it. Make sure that you're paying attention to who sent it to you and why they sent it to you. And what does the link actually say? It might be like one word, but you know, what does the URL look like? Is the sender actually the sender? Is it actually your CEO telling you to click on this? Is it just something, is it really weird that your CEO is emailing you? So all these checks and balances that we kind of have to go through inside of our head before we click on links. And everybody's bad at it. I'm bad at it. Frank, I don't want to speak for you, but I'm going to guess that you're not that great at it. Yeah. Like we all, because again, it's this human behavior kind of sector of cybersecurity. And honestly, when it comes to cybersecurity, what are we really trying to do? For the most part, we're trying to change human behavior. We're trying to, we've heard it a couple different ways. You can call it building in a culture of cybersecurity. You can call it end user training. There's all kinds of different, I don't want to say buzzwords, but, you know, different names that we kind of give this. But what we're really trying to do is we are trying to change how humans interact with their machines and with technology in order to, you know, stop any kind of possible exploitation or attack. So again, before you click on that link, think about it. Think about before you open that email, think about it. And in our everyday lives, it's really hard to do that because we've got so many other things going on. But this is one thing, again, it's just changing that automated human process of, oh, here's a link from the CEO, click on it. Is it really a link from the CEO? Frank, do you have anything to add to my rambling?
No, I mean, I don't think you're rambling. I think it's just something that we're going to hear forever. And those companies that preach we've got a course that will train you to have a culture of security are always going to make money, right? I'm like, literally, they make these classes where they just go in and they're like, now, what do we do? Not click the links.
And then they kind of, you know, the great thing about those kinds of courses, though, is that they do back them up then with usually, you know, as long as your enterprise pays for it, they back it up with a campaign afterwards where they'll actually send out fake spam emails and see who clicks on it. And oh, no, you clicked on it. And now you have to go through the training again.
Right.
So there is that reinforcement that kind of happens with something like that that annoys everybody, but is something that's necessary.
So on the topic of links and viruses, both literal and figurative, one thing that's cropped up quite a bit is spam emails claiming to be some kind of public health authority that are threatening kind of personal health data. And those have, especially these days, kind of a new urgency. Can you speak to that at all and what makes those kind of threats unique and why people might be more apt to open those?
Absolutely. Yeah. So again, it's playing on human psyche, right? What's on everybody's minds right now? You know, obviously COVID-19 is a big thing that's on everybody's mind right now. No matter where you live in the world, it's a concern. So, you know, when we see something newsworthy or we see something, hey, possible vaccine or a possible cure, you know, people want to, oh, is that real? You know, it's our want to have the information as quickly as possible, really, that kind of gets us in the end. A funny anecdote about that actually is one of the things that we were doing at the beginning in ISACA was we were creating these videos from our houses because we didn't really know how long the pandemic was going to last or how long we were going to be working from home. So we were asked to create these videos, you know, just to kind of connect with the members and show them, you know, different things you can do inside your house to help secure your networks. And what I actually did was I installed an intrusion detection system in my house. So I actually was sitting there and watching, you know, different attacks happen. This was like maybe a few weeks after the pandemic really kind of started to speed up. And I was really surprised because all of a sudden this notification came up in my IDS that said, you know, basically said somebody clicked on a link that was a false advertisement for a COVID-19 cure. And I was like, that's already in the system. That's already a rule that's written into Security Onion, which is, again, is freeware, or I'm sorry, open source, free software that you can download. And these rules are free as well. So, and what had actually happened, I was able to trace it back. And it was actually, my wife was on her laptop and she was visiting another website. And it was an ad that popped up on that website. She didn't click on it, but it was an ad that popped up on that website that was saying that there was a vaccine or essential oil or something that would stop COVID-19 from spreading. So again, it's hard to stop, because it's something that we all want. We all want to know what's going to happen. We all want to know as soon as possible what's going on. Frank, what do you think?
No, I agree. It is that. I'd say that's part of it. Wanting to stay informed, wanting to stay aware. It's weird that you see this transition, right? The attackers definitely take advantage of the design. They're doing their best to predict their futurists as well, Dustin. But they're doing their best to predict what you want to see. Right. And making it look like something that you expect to see it from. That's why when you saw a lot of the exploitations that were happening because of the COVID cure stuff, it looked like it was from an official organization. It looked like it was an official like FDA kind of DHS notice and so forth. And it's kind of impressive. Right. It's kind of similar to junk mail you used to get. I remember during the recession, I knew people who would receive these letters that 100% had convinced them that they were losing their house and that they had to vacate it to these people that would show up and so forth. And sure, as you can guess, those were fake letters,
yeah,
by scammers and so forth, but it looked legitimate. And how many times do you get those things in the mail for your car that look like they're official recall notices and that you have to buy special insurance, but then you find out, nope, that's not the case. Dustin and I used to work with a guy who, and this is kind of embarrassing because he was in intelligence, but he got a pop-up on his computer. He was on the internet. A pop-up came up saying, this is the FBI. You need to send us, and Dustin knows who I'm talking about. You need to send us money from, you need to go to 7-Eleven and buy a PayPal gift card. And that's the only way you can pay the FBI to make sure that we don't extort you.
That's right. It was actually a really early form of ransomware almost, because it popped up on his screen and it wouldn't really let him do anything until he
until he put in like the coupon code or something.
Right. Whatever it was. No, but he knew he was like, oh, yeah, it's a piece of malware or whatever. So obviously, you know, we have people who know a little bit more about it. But Frank brings up an interesting point. You know, we have so many avenues of attack now. It's not just email. I mean, maybe this is just a problem in the US, but we get robocalls all the time. We get calls from people claiming to be help desk, right? Hey, sir, you know, we're your Windows help desk and your Windows machine is acting funny. And we've detected that. And you need to go and type in this URL into your. There's all these different avenues that are happening. I think there's a little bit of fatigue happening, I think, with society with that, where we're just getting so tired of getting calls, of getting texts, of getting emails, of getting instant messages or private messages on Facebook, on Imgur, on, you know, whatever social media site you're on. And it's really, really hard to stay vigilant when you are just constantly being bombarded from all different avenues.
What I'm getting more impressed with are the texts that have links in it, because I received one the other day that told me, oh, your shipping is on the way. Here's your link to track it. Mm. And I order stuff from Amazon. So does my wife. And I'm like, but I don't know this number. And I've received nothing like this before. Right. And that doesn't look like any URL I've ever noticed. But like, how often are people expecting texts? And then they just click. Right? Because you don't expect that necessarily as an exploitation vector. So I don't know, maybe something's coming in the mail, but I'm not going to know.
Absolutely. No, I think my friends are probably just sick of it, because they'll send me a link and I'm like, did you send this link? And they're like, yeah, I literally just sent that to you. And I'm like, I know, but did you send it? Like,
right.
The spoofing capabilities are amazing. I actually got a call from a gentleman the other day who was like, hey, did you just call this number? And I was like, no, I didn't. He's like, well, somebody called me from this number. And he's like, oh, it must have been one of those robocalls because they've gotten really good at spoofing numbers. So they're actually using legitimate looking numbers, you know, actual users' numbers in order to send messages or to call or whatever it is. These are all the avenues for any type of malware. I mean, like, it could just be that malware is they're trying different attack avenues and they're really focusing on the human element of a network. Again, everybody who's listening to this understands that the human element is usually the weakest link in most networks, right? And it's a million different reasons. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not going to go into it. But I think it's because our technical controls have actually gotten really, really good in recent years. And so really the only way is to have unwitting user action or even witting user action, depending on what's going on in your network, but or with your employees. But it's a tough problem to solve. And I think for me, it's interesting, Frank, you were like, I think we're always gonna have this problem. And maybe, but I also think at some point there's gonna be this some type of AI or some kind of heuristic analysis that's gonna pop up and be like, Dustin, I noticed that you weren't looking at the screen in the usual way that you do when you're paying attention and you clicked on that link. Are you sure you wanna continue?
That we're totally on our way there.
Try this. And you wanna talk about malware, okay? Let's adware. Adware. Does everybody remember that? That was is pretty bad.
It's still
stuff.
Real.
It's still real. That's right. Why do I talk about things like they don't exist anymore? Of course they still exist. It's a human problem and it is and it isn't. It kind of malware is this interesting thing that kind of it needs an avenue to get in. Right. But it also usually needs some kind of an exploit of a system, whether that exploit is you don't have any antivirus. Although that's really, really hard to find these days because Microsoft has literally built antivirus into Windows. If you're talking about Linux machines and Mac machines as well, they usually have some kind of a built-in protection or if not built-in free for Linux. So we have these great protections and we have these great free repositories of signature databases and whatnot for known attacks. But malware there are several avenues it kind of has to utilize in order to properly work, right? And of course, the human element is who's gonna provide that the attack avenue for it. But then once it gets on the system, it's gotta stay on the system and remain on the system and be able to evade any kind of detection or deletion. So it truly is a melding of what we usually refer to, and what I know Frank loves this term as well, is defense in depth. Right? We can't just have anti-malware on our computer. We need to make sure that the avenue that the malware gets onto the computer is also closed off via either spam filtering or end user training or both, right? So now we're talking about all these layers and all these levels of our networks and how we defend against these attacks.
Most, I'd say, application providers and developers and system developers have a robust native capabilities. Like, I'll give you, for example, Microsoft Windows Defender is so good now that I haven't used Norton, or what's the last one I used? What was the one that had the robot? Malware Bytes. I haven't used Malware Bytes since 2016. It was lightweight. It was great. But then I realized Windows Defender was catching stuff that Malware Bytes wasn't, and it's updating regularly. I'm like, I'm good. Thanks, guys. And so having something on everything, I think, is important, and having it, you know, ubiquitous, so that it's not something you have to manage all the time if you don't want to. I think that's the only way we're going to be able to really secure things.
I feel like we always sound like broken records when we bring out defense in depth, but you're right. It's the only way. It really is the only way that we're going to be able to really solidify security.
We're going to be old men with canes just like slamming on the ground. Defense in depth, we can protect from this.
And then sometimes you can't, you know, defense in depth is a hard thing to do because we have all these great IoT devices that are out here now, but they don't have built-in protections into them. They just don't. And they don't might not necessarily need them, or we just don't think they need them, and then until they do, right? So again, it's building a robust security policy and system within your enterprises that's really going to save the day.
Thanks, Dustin and Frank. That's all the time we have on this episode of the podcast. To hear more of the Cyber Pros Exchange series, subscribe to the ISACA podcast and make sure you never miss an episode.